Good morning. Please grab a handout and two fidgets.
Oh, I want a fidget.
You can have two fidgets.
I can have two fidgets?
Yep.
Oh, it's like my dream. So maybe I'll take three then, just so I feel important. We have to let if I can have everyone's attention. I intended to do a little more of an extended introduction to Sabrina, but they need her back at the signing, so, and I don't want to get in trouble. Welcome, everyone, or mostly everyone. Julie Gordon, Executive Director of REACH. I think there's actually people in this room I have not met, which is unbelievable. We have grown so much, and I'm hoping over the rest of the year I'll actually get to see more you guys more, but... It's kind of an amazing growth trajectory. In that spirit, I just want to take a minute to introduce Sabrina Shapira, who is our HR professional. Thank you. Finally, we're at, like, I think 63 employees, so we finally said, oh, gee, maybe we need an HR person. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to introduce Sabrina. Welcome, all of you. Feel free to be in touch with her if you have any questions. She's got a lot of great ideas, and you should be getting emails from her more and more.
Don't be shy. Come on.
Anyway, so I'm out of breath. I ran to get her. All right, she has to go back.
Okay, well, I'm honored to be your HR.
Thank you. Thank you in advance.
Grab a handout and two fidgets.
Okay. So
don't forget your fidgets.
Okay.
Sorry, Julie, go ahead.
No, it's okay. You don't want to hear from me. You're here to hear from Laura. Wow, for someone with ADD, this is really challenging. Okay. this is what our students go through, ready? Every time they try to say a sentence, they get, oh, look, a squirrel. Which is literally what I do. Anyway.
Oh, yes, we're good.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, this is Laura Gold. She's amazing. She's been an amazing partner. She is the brains behind Timber Ridge and many of the OT and speech people that we've been lucky enough to bring into our school. She's a fantastic partner, and I'm really looking forward to you guys getting a chance to hear from her. And again, welcome everyone. It's good to see you. And okay, now I'll catch my breath.
Okay, good.
I'll take my pictures.
Welcome. If you do not have, everyone needs a handout and two fidgets. Feel free to get up in the middle and go grab one. I have a three-hour presentation that I'm squeezing into 50 minutes, and so we're gonna go through this fairly quickly. Feel free to interrupt me at any time. I love questions. I love conversation. I did set an alarm for halfway through so I can get to what to do about the issues. So we're not just going to discuss the issues, but how to deal with them. I know that's what you're really here for. Okay. How fast is your engine running is our topic, and it's a self-regulation and arousal workshop. I'm Laura Goltz, owner of Timberridge Pediatric Therapy. We do OT, speech, PT. We have a Skokie clinic, a Deerfield clinic. We do a lot of REACH, which we love to work with REACH and do everything we do in the day schools. We also work in schools as outside providers. We do evaluations, treatment, parent coaching, group services, summer camp, and we will have a preschool in the fall of 2024. This is my information. It's in your packet. I love to problem solve. Feel free to really send me an email about a student. And that makes my day. So feel free to keep my information on hand. Okay, what is arousal? Hello, welcome. Grab a handout and two fidgets. Right here, yeah. So arousal is the sensation of being alert and awake. Welcome. Grab a handout and two fidgets, please. Arousal is our level of energy or how tired we are. Arousal is key in supporting attention and focus. What do we know about arousal? I'm going to show you guys a really quick intro video. Can you see over there? You can see? You're good? All right, take a look at this.
Kid has their own individual energy meter. Each kid has their own individual energy meter. This is how charged up they're going to be or how drained their battery might be. This is Neurodiversipedia, and we're going to talk about what that battery means in terms of going about your daily life. The level of arousal, or their battery level, is going to show us how ready they is understanding this battery level or the level of arousal in their child allows you to go throughout your day much more comfortably. If your child's level of arousal is extremely high, it means they might be very alert, they might be anxious about certain stimulus, or they're just ready to explode at any time. You don't want a super high level arousal, but on the complete opposite side, you don't want a very low level of arousal. This means they aren't very alert and they're not really paying attention to what's going on around them. A kid with low level of arousal might look like he's uninterested, tired, or even maybe a little depressed. There's a lot of different strategies out there for trying to regulate these levels of arousals or your child's energy level. Certain things like sensory integration therapy or even just physical exercise to get energy out is a great way to go about maintaining these battery levels. If you're concerned about how your child's energy level is throughout the day, check out getbully.com for more.
All right, we're going to wrap that up. So he talks about specifically these specific issues for kids with special needs. I don't agree. This is all on a continuum of normal. I'm sure we can all relate to where our battery level is and how it affects how we function. Okay, just to, we got to go into the brain, otherwise it's really not a course, right? So arousal is controlled in the brain, basically deep inside the brain at the reticular activating system. It's really the most powerful and essential function of the brain. Arousal levels change over the course of a day. So the requirements for arousal vary. You know, he actually said you don't want a really high level of arousal, you don't want a really low level of arousal. I don't really agree with that, and we're going to get into it. Sometimes you do want a low level of arousal. Sometimes you do, you know, if you're playing in a basketball game, you do want a high level of arousal. So we're going to talk about that a little bit more. But arousal in general lies on a continuum with no end being good or bad. We are all adjusting our own level of arousal constantly. The fidgets I gave you, I don't hear any of them or even see any of them, will help you a little bit adjust your level of arousal as well. I think there are people who still need to come in. So it is ideal when our arousal level matches the state that we're in. That's, you know, if, like I said, if you're in an exercise class, your arousal level is going to be high. If you're putting your baby to sleep, your arousal level is going to be low. All right, I got a pop quiz for you guys.
That was
your best. I know, right? You learned? You got 3 minutes? All right, what level of arousal is this?
Yeah.
What level of arousal is this? What level of arousal is this? Yeah. Anyone know what we call this? Yeah, it's the calm, alert state. Okay, are we all there now? Are we all in a calm, alert state? Or did we drink too much coffee and we have a high level of arousal? Or are we bored? Okay, self-regulation. Let's talk about that a little bit. Self-regulation is the ability to attain, maintain, and adjust arousal levels appropriately depending on the situation and the stimuli presented. We'll talk a little bit more about this. So what might get in the way of self-regulation? Anyone have any ideas of what might get in the way of self-regulation? Don't be shy.
Amount of sleep.
Coffee. How much coffee you've had?
Hunger.
Personality? Yep, personality. Neurological stuff, yes.
Someone said stress.
Stress, yeah, great. Okay, so we're going to zip through this next part. I feel like you guys already have a good idea, but I'll introduce a few more that you didn't get. Cultural. Think about different cultures and what level of arousal cultures have. Think about communities. Think about family, right? You walk into that Shabbos meal and there's like all the children sitting like that. And then you walk into my house and everyone's screaming and jumping all over the place. So our family has a higher level of arousal. I'll let you guys read that quickly. I'm sure we all agree with that. Quality and quantity of sleep that day, like somebody said. Activity level that day, you know, were you sitting at your desk all day, or did you get up and start with morning yoga? Unexpected routine changes, you know, traffic, how late did you sleep in? Social interactions, you know, what happened in that child's home on their way to school? Was there an unhappy bus driver? Was their, you know, parent in a bad mood? Illness. Living situation, you know, what's happening in the home? Are they in a safe home? what's the availability of food in their home? This does happen in our community. What was the quality and quantity of food that day? Depression, anxiety. What is depression? What is that going to look like most of the time in terms of level of arousal? Yeah. How about anxiety? Yeah. Trauma, both. Sadness, is it their state that day? Are they sad about something? Are they stressed? Someone said stress. Are they angry? Are they fearful? Is it too hot in the room? What's that going to do to arousal? Yeah. Too cold. What's that going to do to arousal? Maybe high. You might be like shivering and just too bright, too dim. How does it feel with the lights out in here? How does it feel?
Calm.
Good. Your fidget should counteract that a little bit. We want the calm alert state here. Too dim, too loud. Coffee. What is coffee going to do to your arousal? Mm-hmm. Right? Have you ever had too much coffee and you're just everything? What's that?
Never.
But when that's that feeling of your child, of your student on high arousal, where it's like any sound and you're jumping, or someone says the wrong thing to you and you're yelling at them. That's that feeling of high arousal. Sugar. Okay, you've had two donuts. An hour later, it's going to take a lot for you to respond. Are you fasting? We do have days like that in school. Have you had a really large meal? What does this tell you? Oh, no information there. What is the demand of a task due to your arousal? So let's say you have a task that's the student perceives as too challenging. What might that do to their arousal? What's that? Brings it up. What else might it do? Yes, we're going to talk about that. Beautiful. What if the task is too easy?
They might shut down.
They might just be bored.
And they have to get very fidgety.
Yes. They're looking for their own stimulation because cognitively they're not.
There's a Honda Civic in the parking lot with the motor on. License plate
All right, sensory events. I told you I have 3 hours to squeeze into an hour, so nothing's going to stop me today. Sensory events, external or internal. So if there's a fire alarm, what that might do to a student's arousal or a teacher's arousal, right? The power goes out. They have a stomach ache. They have a headache. Also, biology and neurology, genetics, diagnoses. So we know that ADHD causes seekers, and there's a percentage of kids with ADHD diagnosed and undiagnosed all around us. All right. Poor sensory integration leads to poor arousal regulation. So I am an OT, so I'm going to give you a quick education on sensory integration. All right, what is sensory integration? Sensory integration is the organization of sensation for use. Senses give us information about our body and our environment, and we organize and process sensations so that we can self-regulate. Self-regulation is what we need in order to maintain and change our levels of arousal. Self-regulation is the ability to regulate ourselves and match our arousal to the situation. And when a child can do that, that's an outcome of good sensory integration. We're going to talk a little bit more about this. For most children, self-regulation occurs as part of natural development. For some children, it doesn't. All right, another quiz. OTs cannot answer. How many senses are there? I got five, I got six.
Is it eight?
I got eight. Any other guesses? All right, who says there are five senses? Raise your hand. Who says there's six senses? Raise your hand. Who says there are eight senses? Raise your hand. All right, here we go. See, if you're not going to learn anything today, you're going to learn how many senses there are. All right, there's eight. The correct answer was eight. We're going to really quickly go through this. Here are the eight senses. There's your tactile sense. The receptors for your tactile sense lie in your... There's the oral sense. Receptors lie in your... Olfactory sense. Receptors lie in your... Auditory sense. Receptors lie in your... Visual sense. Receptors are in your... All right. Next comes proprioception. Proprioception is the sixth sense, and it is our sense of body in space or body awareness. So that student that falls off their chair, we've seen those, they have issues with proprioception. That student who is constantly bumping into other people, that's a proprioceptive issue. At the same time, how about that student who is crashing into other students and wrestling and purposely throwing themselves onto the ground? They're seeking proprioception. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. The seventh sense is the vestibular sense. So let me back up, actually. The proprioceptive sense, the receptors, just like, you know, auditory, they lie in your ears. Tactile, they lie in your skin. For proprioception, they lie in your muscles and joints. So for the child who doesn't have a lot of awareness of what's happening in their muscles and joints, they're falling off their chair, they're bumping into things and people, they're trying to get information about where their body is in space by touching other things. And for the kids who are seeking proprioception, and those are the kids who are crashing into things, they need that stimulation in their muscles and joints. So, you know, putting lotion on is not going to help. They need to crash into the ground. They need to wrestle. They need to get into those receptors. The vestibular sense is our sense of movement. The receptors lie in our inner ear in a semicircular canal. There's liquid in there that basically helps us with balance. So what would a student look like who had issues with the vestibular sense? Can anyone take a guess? Poor Your balance. Sense of movement. What's that?
Poor balance?
Yes.
What? Something with their gait? Something weird about
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, they could get car sick. We do treat car sickness. I know you feel like it's not treatable. We treat it at Timber Ridge, so just send them our way.
What about kids who just are constantly moving?
So those are the kids who are seeking the vestibular sense. Now, because the vestibular, the receptors are in your ear and in your head, those kids who are moving their body, that's not vestibular. It's those kids who are changing their head position or who are seeking things with movement of their head specifically, because that's where those receptors are. The eighth sense was discovered in the past few years, actually, and it's called interoception. We deal with this a lot in Timber Ridge Therapy and in the classrooms. Interoception is knowledge of what's happening inside your body. And this is a big one for our students. So, are you tired? Are you hungry? You know, you have a child who's over the top, and then you realize that you're hangry, sweetie. Why don't you go have a snack? And they don't know. They just don't know. Do they have to go to the bathroom? Those are for our preschoolers who are still having accidents, or even our first graders who are still having accidents. That's an issue with interoception, and the receptors are literally in our internal organs. Again, we work with this a lot. I would say in the past we did a lot of sensory integration work, which we'll talk about. Now we start with interoception, because you can't teach a child, you know, well, you, sweetie, need to go take a walk. But they need to know what's happening in their body before they can decide how to fix it. So we do a lot of interoception work. Okay, sensory preferences are on the continuum of normal. So we all have our preferences. Can anyone think of a preference you might have that, if you really analyze it, you realize it's a sensory preference? Anyone who, like, chews gum most of the day? Or what's another sensory preference, OTs?
Like tears.
Yeah, anyone who's, like, a little bit annoyed. People who you need total dark. Or people who, certain materials of clothes bother you. It's really on a continuum of normal. You like to have really crunchy foods during the day. You really are working with your own sensory preferences. Kids, this is really important. Kids and adults seek and avoid in order to regulate their own level of arousal. So when there's a child crashing on the ground, you don't want to say don't crash. You want to turn it into a more appropriate way for them to get what they're looking for. It's like you having an itch and someone saying don't scratch it. Right? So we're going to talk about that. What does this look like in the classrooms? I think I deleted a few slides there, so just forget that. So do preferences affect functioning? That's when we really know that we need to bring OT in. You know, like I said, a student might have a preference, they might wiggle in their seat, they might stand at their desk, but they're doing fine. It's not affecting their functioning. You know, we need to kind of be accepting of that. Does it affect their learning? You know, are they not able to grasp the information that's being taught based on standing or crashing or fidgeting? Again, that's when we need to treat it. Okay, we're going to now get into the different types of students that we see and what that looks like, and then eventually what to do about it. So we're going to start with a hyper-responsive student. The hyper-responsive student, are they, what's their level of arousal? High, right. So they hyper-respond, they're constantly just on edge waiting for something to happen. They're processing too much sensory input. Have we seen students like this? Yeah? They're overwhelmed. They have poor filtering out of information. So if you guys are really quiet, you'll hear the fan. I assume it's the projector. The hyper-responsive student might be distracted by that. And that's something we need to be aware of. Okay, these are things that you're going to hear the hyper-responsive student called. Hyper-reactive, hyper-sensitive, over-responsive to sensory input, they're on sensory overload, this is all the same student. Heightened registration, sensory defensive, sensory avoider. I want you to kind of understand that this is all one class of student, and so when I tell you how we're going to deal with these kids, you'll know that it's all of these. Picky. I'm sure we hear that a lot. They're very picky. They're sensitive.
Picky about what?
Picky about what? They could be a picky eater. They could be picky about what clothes they wear. They could be picky about where they sit in the classroom. So the picture of that student tends to be a very anxious student and child. So if I get a referral and I talk to a parent and I hear that they're a picky eater and the seams in their socks bother them, I can then tell the parent what that child is like. And they're like, what? Like, they're very anxious. There's like a picture of that person. And it just all goes together. Because think about it. If this sound bothers you, and you're distracted by someone coming in and out, and the seams of your socks bother you, how can you function? You know, you're just constantly waiting for the next thing to upset your sensory system. Do you see how that would kind of put you on edge and make you anxious?
And then your battery dies faster.
Yeah, so okay, let's go back to the, yes. Your battery gets drained faster. Let's think about when you've had too much coffee. Are you a coffee drinker?
Yeah.
Okay, you've had way too much coffee. Do you feel anxious, right? Because you're already on high alert. And then things that come your way are going to upset you or make you react much quicker than after your exercise class, where you're in more of a calm alert state. So let's talk about some examples of sensory input. We talked about the sound of the fan. Let's talk about some other sensory input they may not be able to filter out. The school bell. The clock ticking, students singing, davening, pages turning, seams in their socks, the feeling of their glue stick, the hum of the air conditioner, the whispers of other students, the sounds of the lawnmower outside that nobody else notices, the random smells in the room, all the visual stimulation on the display boards in the room. Oh, shoot, that's our halfway point. I'm going to just talk really fast. Things happening in the classroom, bright lights overhead, the feeling of his or her school uniform. So all of those things, those really subtle things, can feel really overwhelming. These kids, like I was saying, they tend to be anxious. They tend to have a controlling personality. So I'm sure that you have worked with students who need to control the environment. They need to control the play. They need to control what's happening at recess. Yeah, go ahead.
They kind of call them the phone, like when someone really can't, like chewing or whispering. Yes. Like, is that owing to this?
Yeah.
Is that an OCD?
Sure, yeah.
A lot of women.
It's not yeah. Treatable.
What's that?
It's not treatable.
I mean, I think it is. I think it is, and I'll tell you why. Yes, because generally when you have someone who's sensitive to other people chewing, they're sensitive to other things also. So what we do is just general self-regulation.
How do you deal with that?
Let's get to that if we have time in the end. Or you have my email address. I don't want to run out of time. Okay, we're going to watch one more quick video. Some of you might have seen this, depending on your degree in school. All right, pay close attention here, please. Ready? Everyone looking? If you miss it, you're not going to get the answer.
Collective attention. Count how many times the players wearing white pass the basketball. How many passes did you count?
13.
The correct answer is 15.
All right. Sorry. How many did you guys count? Throw out a number. 14? 14? 14? Did anyone get anything different?
15.
Okay. How many of you have seen this video before? Raise your hand. Okay. You know what? How many of you have not seen this video before? Okay. For those of you who have not seen this video before, did you notice anything strange in the middle? Right.
No, I did not see the gorilla.
All right, so I'll quickly show you guys the gorilla.
No.
Oh my God.
My son is taking intro to psych, and he's like, they showed the video that you love, Mommy, in college. What does that tell us? Like, how does that relate to, I know that every professor who shows that uses it for something else. What does that tell, like, how does that relate to what we're talking about? Any idea?
They're all noticing it.
So, what I was thinking is, for when you're so hyper-focused on the passing of the ball, you're so hyper-focused on the lawnmower outside and the seams in your socks and the whispering next to you, how can you focus on the teacher, right? You literally, I missed the gorilla the first time I saw that, because when you're very hyper-focused on things, hopefully you're so hyper-focused on the teacher that you don't notice the sounds happening outside.
Hold an advance upon the gorilla and count your rebels to both.
True. True that.
But it wouldn't be so fun.
Right. Okay, so again, we're going to zip through this because I want to make sure I get to how to help these students. So the hyper-responsive student can be distracted, run away, refuse, avoid. They may be self-soothing in an attempt to self-regulate, and they may be scream or melt down. The hyper-responsive student may also look like low arousal. Somebody said shutting down. So this is when they're so overwhelmed that they've just shut down. They're on sensory overload. They need to block out all input in order to function. Let's quickly get to the hyporesponsive student. So for the hyporesponsive student, normal sensory input is not enough. Have you guys seen a student like this? Can you picture this? Or I can give you a little bit more of an education, and then you can let me know. They have low registration, so they're not going to hear their name called the first four times. They need a higher intensity. Oh, we're stuck here. You might see decreased interaction, decreased learning, decreased engagement. More sensory in stimulation is going to increase their alertness. Hyper-responsive students going to be called low arousal, stuck or content, these kids are low arousal and they're stuck. They're content in their low arousal. What might this look like? Disengaged, disinterested, delayed or no response, ignoring teacher or peers, appears lethargic, spacey, passive, slow processing of information. Now have we seen students like this? Okay. This is, I feel like, this is the class of students that gain the most attention. We're going to talk about this. So this is the hypo-responsive student, just like the other one who was laying on the floor, but this one is not stuck in their low arousal. They realize that being low arousal is not working for them, so they're doing things for themselves to increase their level of arousal to a calm, alert state. These kids can be very annoying, right? These are the kids who are pulling the loud fidget. These are the kids who are constantly moving. And what I want to kind of give you a little bit of information that I hope will be like a paradigm shift in your mind, they're really helping themselves. And what they're doing is generally working for them. It might not be working for their peers who are annoyed by all the talking and whispering, or it might not be working for the teacher, but let's talk about how we can help them seek what they need in a way that works for everybody. So these kids who are need more information to respond, but they're seeking. Is everyone kind of clear on this? What that looks like? So they're helping themselves to increase their level of arousal. So it's that kid who's constantly shaking their leg, or the kid who's pushing back on their chair, doing things to keep themselves awake. They're trying. They should be getting our positive feedback when really they're getting the negative feedback. Okay. Yes, please. Good question. We're going to get to it. Okay. If I talk fast enough. Okay. What might they do to attempt to increase their own level of arousal? Move, make noise, pace, fidget, touch things, lean on the back of their chair, make noises, chew on their clothes or hair. So we see these kids often as a problem. And again, really, they're helping themselves. They're doing what they need to do in order to be able to function in the classroom. What can we do to help? Oh, good. We're only about 5 minutes off schedule. All right. Let's quickly talk about the development of arousal regulation. Development of regulation takes time. It strengthens with practice, and it starts with co-regulation. We're going to talk a little bit about that as well. Co-regulation, what is it? It is receiving help to regulate. It starts in infancy. When a parent swaddles, what sensory strategy are they using to regulate? Think about the eight senses. Deeper. Swaddling, yes, swaddling is touch, but also it's getting into the muscles and joints. So it's, thank you. See, we don't even know as parents, like, how awesome we are and what, we know everything about sensory integration.
And why it works.
That's right. Singing to your baby. What sensory strategy is being used? Good. Rocking your baby. Yeah. So sensory regulation strategies are strategies which use the senses to help with regulation, not just for students with sensory differences. So we talked about all the things that are a problem for arousal, culture, family situation, illness, what else did we say, too big of a meal, too much coffee. We can use the sensory strategies for all of those reasons. It doesn't have to be just someone with sensory differences. Why are we doing them? To help the student reach the level of arousal needed. All right, we're going to read this very quickly. This is what good learning looks like. Sitting still and looking, right? Is this what good learning looks like? Who thinks this is what good learning looks like? I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus. Okay, let's have a closer look at these two brains. We have the neurotypical brain on the left, and I'm not going to call this the autistic or ADHD brain. to me, this is just a child who learns differently, which we know in 2024, everybody learns differently.
Neurodiverse.
So this child can focus on learning when he's still and looking. So you see on the left, he's focusing on his work. He's getting pretty hungry, but he's still focusing on his work. This is what good learning looks like for this child. This child cannot focus on learning when he's still and looking. This is what's going through his mind. I must not get in trouble. The fan is so loud. I must keep my eyes on the teacher. I must stay still. Don't move. Ow, my tag's uncomfortable. I need to focus on my work. Focusing is a very small part of what's going on in his brain. So this is not what good learning looks like for this child. If the main goal is good learning, kids who learn differently can't be asked to sit and look and not move. Thank God in 2024, we're starting to gain an understanding of this. And a lot of teachers are still stuck in this because, A, we've been doing this for many years, and B, it is frustrating when you have kids, one bouncing on a ball, and one, it's hard for the teacher to stay focused. But this is a really, really important thing that I want you guys to learn. In most kids who learn differently, good learning looks like this. So it's important not to demand eye contact, not to demand sitting still. We're going to talk about fidgeting and fidget tools. But this is the right way to learn for this child. Yeah?
Laura, would you say this is also true of older in high school?
Yes.
So some of these kids stay this way and...
Yes. So I'll give you an example with one of my kids. He is very distracted visually, and he, in order to learn, he had to turn off his visual system. So he, thank God I'm an OT and discovered this, he literally couldn't look at the teacher if he was absorbing information. And he's still like that. Now he's in college and he knows to tell the professor, this is how I learn. I'm not paying attention. But yes, it can continue. And, you know, you have to learn kind of how you learn. But it absolutely, you know, if he's looking, he's not processing the information. So I would say it's more rare. You know, most people as they get older can learn to fake it or deal with it. But I think that some of these things do persist.
Especially among the students that you deal
with. For sure. They haven't learned those coping strategies yet. It's important to remember that good learning doesn't always look the same for each child. The most important thing is focus on the goal. So in my parent coaching, I do a lot of this also. Like, what is your goal? If your goal is to have, you know, a happy dinner time, don't worry about if they're eating or what they're eating. If your goal is for them to eat healthily, don't worry about if they're sitting at the table. Like, you have to kind of choose your goal. So here, you're focusing on the goal. If your goal is learning and for them to get the information that they need, it shouldn't matter how they're getting it, as long as it's not a distraction, which we're going to get into. Is eye contact really needed? I know this is a paradigm shift for people. Is sitting really needed? Can they stand at their desk? Do they need to be at a desk? Can they be pacing around the back of the room? Why can't they chew gum? Why is chewing gum so terrible? That's a good point. And that's when you say, choose your own seat. Don't. Okay, well, we're going to get into how to help with that. Look on the floor. We have noise-canceling headphones. Okay, we're going to talk about that. Is a fidget actually? I want to bring you guys back. I wish we could do 3 hours. Next time, please give me 3 hours. the goal is learning, and I think that's something really to keep in mind. And it doesn't have to look the same in every student.
They're not doing the Sanders
thing. Say one more time.
They're not like looking at you and sitting. But how do you gauge that focus?
You can question them. You can look at a test. You can question them. That's really it.
Right.
All right, strategies. We don't have a ton of time, so I'm going to go through this quickly.
Well, is learning all about the teacher talking?
No, not necessarily, and that's why I said...
That's also a way to gauge it.
For sure. Wait, that's true also, right. That's true also. But again, it's about your goal. Your goal might not be for them to learn something. Your goal might be for them to work in a small group. And then they do have to stay at the table. You know, so it's I'm not saying what your goal has to be. I'm just saying it's important to think about your goal so you know what matters, you know, what battles to choose. All right, let's start with decreasing arousal. Who are we decreasing arousal for?
Sorry.
No, I like that you laughed. So who needs decreasing of arousal?
The hyper-reactive kids.
Who else? This is a trick question. I don't want to throw anyone under the bus.
The teacher might need it.
That's right. I love that. Yes, yes, yes. And in my three-hour version of this, we talk a lot about that.
The mom might need the
teacher. Right, yes. I love that. I love that. Please put a pin in that and think about it. So your student who is falling off the chair and the student who is fidgeting and the student who's, you know, hitting the kid next to him, they don't need to decrease arousal. They need to increase arousal. So remember we talked about there's three types of students. There's the high alert ones who are anxious and they're constantly waiting for the next thing to come. And then there's the hyporesponsive student, and they can look two different ways. One is they're sort of succumbing to the low arousal and they're falling asleep in their chair. The other one doesn't want to be low arousal, and so they're seeking stimulation to increase their level of arousal. What a lot of teachers are doing who haven't taken this class is they're trying to decrease the level of arousal for the student who's falling off their chair and moving all over the place, and that's doing the exact opposite of what we want. So let's talk a little bit about that. So if we're decreasing arousal, again, who is this good for? It's for the high arousal, hyper responder. It's also good, and this is going to be really confusing, it's good for that low arousal looking student who has shut down. Yeah. So it's, you know, when you have a student who's shut down, they're shut down because they're on such high alert, they just can't do it anymore. And so you need to decrease arousal for them too. And it's confusing, and reach out to your OT. And you're also going to know your students. You're going to be like, okay, this student is a perfectionist. The fact that they're shut down doesn't mean that they're low arousal. Like, as you get to know the students, you're going to know.
What does that look like in low arousal? How do you decrease their arousal? Once they're shut down.
Yeah.
Take away the demand.
Well, we're going to use some strategies. I'm going to show you some strategies. All right. Who is we already talked about this. Decreasing arousal is bad for the student who's low arousal as well as the student who's low arousal who's trying to increase their own, and we call them seekers. Okay, then there's a strategy of increasing arousal. Who is that good for? It's for that low arousal student who is underwhelmed, the one who's laying on the floor or head is down at their desk or falling asleep. It's also good for that high arousal student who is seeking, who's trying to increase their own level of arousal. Okay, we already went through this. Here's an OT secret that I'm going to share with you guys. It's an insider secret. Kids tend to seek what they need. So when kids seek stimulation over and over and over, they know what their body needs. If they're falling off their chair, what does their body need? Proprioception. If they're chewing on their hair, what does their body need? Oral stimulation. If they're smelling everything, what does their body need? Olfactory stimulation. So that's the OT secret. Why is your OT coming into the classroom and just observing and then able to write a full report? Now you know. So it's an OT's job to understand that what they're seeking is not enough. It's not working for them, right? If they were seeking and it was working, they wouldn't spend their whole day seeking. So it's almost like when I want a piece of cake and instead I eat, you know, 500 jelly beans because I'm really trying. But if I would just eat that piece of cake and get the intensity that I need, I probably wouldn't have to. So same idea. It's an OT's job to help figure out what that student needs and then change the intensity, the frequency, and the duration. And so that really you need an OT for. All right, let's talk about fidgets. I know a lot of teachers hate fidgets, and I want to talk about why fidgets are wonderful. The most, the way to make a fidget work is to understand appropriate fidget use. You can't give a student a fidget and expect them to use it perfectly in the classroom. Number one, and the most important thing, is allow the student time to explore the novel fidget. So if you're giving a fidget, you're going to say, go throw it, smell it, squeeze it, do all those things you need to do before you sit down in the classroom to use it appropriately. Because you can't expect them not to do that. And then you're basically going to say, if I don't see it or hear it, you're welcome to use it. And that should go with gum too. Every fidget, I think that fidgets are awesome, and any student who needs one should have one. What you're going to find, if you allow them to sort of explore it and let the novelty wear off, the kids who continue to use it are the ones who really need it. The ones who don't really need it, it's going to end up on the floor or in their backpack. So I feel very strongly that fidgets are great, and I think, again, if the teacher can say, if I don't hear it or see it, you're welcome to use it. If I do hear it or see it, I'm going to take it away, and then you can try again tomorrow. I know some teachers say, well, then everyone's going to want a fidget. Well, then give everyone a fidget. This box costs $20, and you'll be the most fun teacher around. I mean, not you guys, but you'll model this for others. So you need to set expectations, boundaries, and rules around the fidget. And then you can warn and remove if it's interruptive. You can also create a contract. I think some of the schools, we've created contracts for them already where you're really having the student sign off on appropriate use and inappropriate use. All right, let's quickly go through the different senses and the sensory strategies that you can use. These are tactile strategies. We have here Velcro that you can put on or under the desk. We have a fun little tactile thing to put in their desk. And we have different things that can go on the pencil that give some tactile stimulation. Down here, we have kids who are standing far enough apart that for kids who are tactilely sensitive, they're not going to feel frustrated. Will these techniques increase or decrease arousal? Both. For certain kids, it will decrease. For certain kids, it will increase. And basically, you can't go wrong with these at all. So a lot of these are going to be trial and error. So if you have a hyper-responsive kid and you give them this, you're not going to do anything wrong. And if you have a lower arousal kid and you give them this, again, it's going to be fine. Auditory sensory strategies. Music in the classroom. Noise-canceling headphones. And creating a space that is not as auditory stimulating. I want to pass these around. These, the Reach therapists have this and use them in every school. And they'll try them with different kids. It is noise canceling, but still allows you to hear. If anyone wants to try them, I'm going to pass them around. So basically here you're decreasing auditory input. Is that going to be for the ones where you're decreasing auditory input, is that going to be for the child on high alert or the child on low? High alert, right. And then the music is going to help for all, and the quieter space is going to help for those kids who are on high alert. If you put a seeker in which I think happens because they might look like a behavior issue. If you have the kiddo who's falling off their chair and the kiddo who's talking to everyone, if you put them in a quiet space, that is not going to help them. Visual. Bright lights in a room, turning on the lights or turning off the lights, making a lava lamp. Here we have a visual timer. Yeah, I really like those. We have also just creating a space with less visual distractions, turning off the lights in the room. Do you feel like these would increase or decrease arousal? Decrease. Is there anything here that would increase? Maybe just bright lights, yeah. But other than that, I would say the truth is some of these, like the visual timers, these are good for calming and alerting.
But they can be super distracting.
Well, if you're demanding eye contact.
It was going to have to do a task question. Like, I can imagine my son, if I was telling him, like, you have 3 minutes to get dressed, here's your timer.
Yeah.
You spend 3 minutes looking at the timer and not get dressed. Mm-hmm.
So there are ways around that. Sometimes you need to pair the timer with the reward. And then they learn to use it appropriately.
Laura, can I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
I've been thinking a lot about high school kids, middle school kids, even kids who are younger and very sensitive to looking or feeling different than others.
Yeah.
If you were to give them these chunky headphones to put on or that, like, poster board, they might shy away from it because they don't want to feel so different. So what are strategies you recommend, especially for the older kids, where they don't want to look different or feel different in any way, but really do need these type of strategies?
Yeah. So what I like for that is having many of them and offering them to anyone who needs them. And then also, for the student who really, really, really needs it, like, it sounds like you have someone like that, they're just gonna realize that, yeah. But it's nice also to just have different, you know, that's why I like offering things, you know, you don't have to have a special need to use a fidget. A fidget helps me focus, and I'm a pretty good focuser, you know, so I think that just having them available. But yeah, very good question.
I think there are also things that aren't as obvious, like, I have noise canceling AirPods, and if I needed them for that, no one would even know I had them on.
Yeah, that's true.
I also think it talks a lot about the classroom that's created or the space from the get-go, constant. It's not just, you know, sensory, it's learning differences.
Yes.
It's all kinds of, it's also about informing all of your students about being sensitive, creating a culture of acceptance and tolerance and
yep.
And reinforcing throughout the year.
Yeah, and equity and not equality. And we're going to talk a little bit about that more here, too. Oral sensory strategies. Sucking, not only for your preschooler, but for the teacher to have a water bottle that requires a strong suck that's very, very regulating. Blowing. Snacking, especially on crunchy things. Chewing, I am all for chewlery. I know a lot of teachers don't like them. Do you know what chewlery is? It's basically a necklace or a bracelet that you can chew on. I see some really, really disgusted faces. They work really, really well. Really well. What's that?
Chewing on their clothes.
Right, or their hair.
These are the people that would eat their
hair. Right, right. Raisins or other chewy snacks. I like these a lot, too, talking about not looking different, is some pencil toppers are for chewing.
Yeah.
So those are nice, too. Vestibular sensory strategy. So remember, that's our sense of movement. Flexible seating. I don't like wobble chairs. I don't think we have them in our schools. Do we? Okay, I just keep that in mind. Wobble chairs are very disorganizing. They don't work well. Do they have them? I've seen them in other schools.
We have them here.
So I don't, the wobble chairs, no, the cushions I like.
No, but they go back and forth.
The ones where you sit on and there's constant movement?
Yeah.
Do they work?
Some students really like, they got really excited when they brought them in.
But do they work?
I don't know.
Okay, I don't love them. I think that it's too much movement.
Are you talking about the high school, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe they can better regulate.
Yeah.
It's either that or they're, like, standing up in the classroom and pacing back
and
forth.
Yeah, but I think high school is different. Like,
yeah.
I think our kids
are. Flexible seating. I love the idea of flexible seating in the classroom. Vestibular sensory strategies, a rocking chair, allowing kids to stand and move, the seat cushion, the move and sit. Let's pass some of these around if anyone wants to try and pass it. This is another flexible seating option for if you're doing things on the floor, if it's a young enough grade. We use these in a lot of the classrooms. It's basically just a stadium seat, but when you sit on it, if anyone wants to try it, they're welcome to, you kind of balance on the bottom here, and it gives you a lot of movement while still being able to focus. Anyone's welcome to try that. And there's a picture of it. There's a rocking chair and another flexible seating thing that we actually do bring into your classrooms for younger kids. Proprioceptive strategies, heavy work, so carrying a weighted backpack, having everyone do different yoga, you know, taking a minute to do different yoga poses, or and you can even do that in high school. All right, guys, let's take a minute and kind of regroup. You might get laughed at. I don't know. I don't work with high schoolers. Weighted lap pads. Let's try this again. Let's try this and pass it around. This is kind of deep pressure that students can have. For little kids, they make them like weighted stuffed animals, and those can be really nice to both increase and or decrease arousal.
Where do we get them?
You can email me. I'll send you some links. A lot of them are available on Amazon. Giving physical boundaries, like a cube chair. And doing things like chair push-ups or other ways to kind of get proprioceptive input. And again, most of these things are good for increasing and decreasing arousal. That's why I don't have them separated. They're just generally regulating. Breathing activities for interoception, breathing activities, sort of checking in with your own body. Non-sensory strategies, coloring, humor and laughter, taking a break, taking a walk, reading, other things in the classroom, puzzles, you know, you can do adult coloring things for the older kids, but other things to kind of help them regulate. Other non-sensory strategies, you can create a calming box where any student can go and use it. Ideally, you want the student to request it and go use it when they need it, but before that happens, as a bridge, you can say, it looks like you might benefit from the calming box. Why don't you go check that out? A little corner, you know, quiet space that students can go to without consequence. And then here's a big one. Really, a non-sensory strategy that helps the students is managing your own, and having the teachers manage their own level of arousal. And that's really huge. Trying not to let the students really, letting their level of arousal change the teacher's level of arousal. It's not easy to do. There's something, we're almost done, guys. Use your fidgets if you need to self-stim a little bit. We got like 3 minutes left. There's something that we call, in the therapy world, that we call therapeutic use of self. Therapeutic use of self is basically using yourself as a therapy tool, and it needs to happen with teachers as well, right? If you've got your class on low arousal, you're going to be cheering and walking around the room, and if everybody's over the top, you might be using a calmer voice, you might lower the lights, etc. If you are feeling overwhelmed or your students are annoying the heck out of you, you might want to model language. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm taking a break, guys. Let's, you know, pull it together. If you had something planned and the students want to do something else, you can say, I can be flexible. Let's do that instead. So really modeling that language for the students. Other movement ideas. This is a really nice one where it's more for younger kids, but you create something like this, you put it in the corner and you say, it looks like you could use some movement. Why don't you go do 5 sticks and come right back? This is a physical activity cube, same idea. Why don't you go roll the cube and do one thing on there? So you're suggesting some movement for them. These are awesome. We don't really have them in our schools, but maybe someday. Okay, recess is always necessary. This is something we need to educate our teachers about. When teachers take away recess, think about what they're doing, right? They're taking all that proprioception, vestibular, tactile, they're taking all of that away from kids who need it. You know, that student who's having a hard time or that classroom who's being really difficult, they need recess more than anyone else. So there's a million other ways to come up with consequences. It should never be missing recess. We'll quickly talk about replacing a challenging or seeking behavior. An example would be a student who chews on their hair. What can we do? We talked about what OTs do. Change the intensity, the frequency, the duration. You might encourage that student to bring a water bottle to class. So you're not going to say stop chewing. You're going to realize that they need that oral stimulation, and you're going to give it to them in a more appropriate way. Maybe they're going to snack at regular intervals. Maybe you're going to suggest that their parents send some crunchy snacks, something that's going to give them that more intensity that they're looking for. A chewy necklace. So we talked about duration, intensity, and intervals. That's it. Oh, I did it in an hour. Thank you guys so much. Again, you have my email address. I'm so happy to problem solve a specific student, whatever you need.
There is an evaluation form which the ATT is using as your ticket of attendance, so please make sure that you pull up that evaluation form and just do the really quick feedback for